Yes, there is still COVID. It is still out there. It is still circulating. Will still be with us for a while. Hopefully not what it was like earlier. Just a few things I wanted to bring up and talk about this morning. First of all, where are we in our cases? Our cases continue to decline here in the Triad area. We're roughly running around 7 to 8 cases per 100,000 per day, which is comfortable. It would put us in the moderate community transmission range by the CDC. Our percent positive of tests is roughly 3.5 to 4%, runs between 3 and 4, which would put us in the minimal community transmission range, so somewhere between minimal and moderate. Cases are still happening, however, probably about 40 or so a day. Almost all of them in unvaccinated people, in fact, about 99% of them in unvaccinated people. We still have people in the hospital with COVID, and we're still admitting patients with COVID to the hospital. Not as many as we were in the first part of April or the last part of March, but we're still running people in the ICU, and more than a handful sometimes in our intensive care units. People are getting COVID. Interestingly, we have not had one single hospitalization in somebody with a normal immune system or modestly immune system who's been vaccinated. It's almost all been unvaccinated people, and in our intensive care units, it's all been unvaccinated. This is just a plug for those of you who are unvaccinated and would like to talk with your physicians or have some questions, reach out and get those questions answered, because now's the time. You want to have a summer that's going to be as normal as you would like it to be, and the way to do that is to get vaccinated. Plus, you're going to protect yourself from hospitalization, including severe illness. Also, you're going to protect those in your family. You'll help protect your community and your workplace and your friends. You'll get to do what you want to do without worries or concerns. You don't need to wear a mask when around other vaccinated people. And lastly, if you're between the ages of 12 and 16, you don't need to quarantine if you've been exposed. So no school at home, and you can still go to summer camp. Whereas if you've been exposed and you're unvaccinated, all those summer activities, the pool, summer camp, going to the library, going to visit family, all those things, if you've been exposed and are unvaccinated, you won't be able to do. So now's a great time to go get the vaccine. I've been asked a little bit about vaccine hesitancy, and vaccine hesitancy comes in a lot of different flavors and ways. Some people are just sort of waiting to make sure that it's as safe as what it looks like it is, and it is as safe as it looks like it is. We've had now at 170, almost 180 million doses given in the United States now. So I think we got a pretty good track record. Some people just don't see the point. You know, COVID's not that bad. You know, why should I take time off of work or go in and get the vaccine? It's not really that big of a deal. Well, that's not true. COVID is a big deal, and we're having more and more young people get hospitalized who've been unvaccinated now, and that's the group who are saying that. So it still is out there, and the fatality rate still runs between 3 to 4% overall for all comers. If you're younger, yes, it's less, but it's still more than it would be from flu or any other virus you could get. So let's get vaccinated. Some people don't trust the government. They think there's microchips in the vaccine, or that the government is out to torpedo them somewhere or another. That's just simply not true. And in fact, when you look at it, all of the vaccine development was actually not developed by the government. Government paid for some of it. Some of the vaccines, I think it was Pfizer's, actually was all privately funded, didn't get any government money. So it was all our usual drug industry and good old American ingenuity and technology that came up with these vaccines, along with other areas across the world in collaboration. So there's no concept of even having a microchip put in a vaccine. Even if you wanted to do it, you couldn't. So people don't need to worry about that. And then lastly, there's just people who just don't want it, and they're not going to talk them into it for whatever reason. And that group will eventually all get COVID. In fact, if you don't get vaccinated, by the time all this is done, you'll either get immune through vaccine or you'll get immune through getting COVID. Getting immune through getting COVID is the hard way and the risky way. So a little bit about variants. We still have variants circulating. The UK, England right now is concerned about the India variant and is concerned that it might postpone the release of their lockdowns in certain areas or the reopening of their country, because they're still having restrictions in the UK. That variant is probably more transmissible. We don't know if it's any more severe at the moment, but they're concerned about that one. Southeast Asia, they're concerned about maybe a new variant. WHO says this morning it's probably not a new variant, or the quote, the hybrid variant that people were worried about. But that also seems to be a bit more transmissible. But I tell you, the world right now, well, here in the United States, it's starting to feel pretty comfortable with COVID, but there are a lot of the areas in the world right now that are really struggling with it. India, the cases are coming down, but they're still really high, still a lot of deaths. And before all this is over, India will have the highest death per 100,000 than any other country. Right now, it's the U.S. that has that distinction, but they'll probably pass us. Southeast Asia, which is Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam, are having issues too with increased cases, increased transmission, as is Taiwan and Japan. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Those countries that did really, really well with COVID over the past year and a half, using purely human behavior mitigation, in other words, working with their people to change the way they behave, in other words, to wear the mask, to really socially distance, to not travel, stay home, stay out of the bars, stay out of the restaurants. A lot of these countries did it pretty well. And it worked. It kept their cases down. But what it looks like is it's not sustainable for them, just like it really wasn't for us either. And so you can't do that forever. After all, humans are social and do get together. And now their cases are starting to increase and increase significantly. And their vaccine programs are way behind what Europe and the United States is. And so they don't have that buffer of vaccine to help them. And that's why we're seeing these cases there. So I just want to bring up, you know, even though it may feel good here in the U.S., no country is an island anymore. It is. We are a globe. We are a community of earthlings. And as long as there's COVID transmitting without difficulty, that's when variants can occur. And while the variants that we all know about now seem to be mostly covered by vaccine, or all covered by vaccine, do we really want to risk having one come up that isn't? So this is why we're seeing all of the discussion about having vaccine equity across the world. And at some point, yes, we're going to help the rest of the world get out of this, because helping them will help us, as well as it's just the right thing to do. You know, so some of the world is saying, you guys are already talking about giving your boosters, but we haven't even got our first shot yet. What's up with that? So you'll see a lot more discussion throughout the summer about vaccine equity. I'm a supporter of it, obviously, as an infectious disease doctor who's in it for all of our world society. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is a lot of discussion that I've kind of avoided over the past few weeks to months about, where did SARS-CoV-2 come from? And I think most of us are all settled that it's a bat coronavirus that changed or mutated. And the question is how did it get from a bat into humans? And the going theory for some time has been that it was through an intermediate animal like a pangolin or something like that, a small mammal. And that's why would we say that? Because that's how SARS-CoV-1 came about, if you remember, in 2003. And viruses skip species all the time and get into the human population. So it's still a very plausible theory. But yet, we've not yet pinned down exactly how and where and when that's happened. And then, as you know, there's this. There's two labs, laboratories in Wuhan, where the pandemic started, that work with coronaviruses and bat coronaviruses. And the speculation is maybe it was a lab accident, and that some one or two or three people working with the virus got infected, and then brought it out gave it to other people. And then there are some people who are saying, wow, it was actually designed by the Chinese for nefarious reasons. And that one I don't believe, because we don't, when looking at the sequence of the virus, that just doesn't make sense. So the science would not support that. But the bottom line is we need to know how this happened. A lot of prominent scientists in the world of infectious diseases and virology have been saying that over the last 2 weeks, including the potential lab leak theory. I agree with that. In order to prevent a pandemic in the future, we need to know the origins of this pandemic. And if it was from a natural bat to animal to human, then we need to know how to change our behaviors so that doesn't occur anymore, just like we did with SARS-CoV-1. If it came out of a lab, then we need to know how to enhance our laboratory regulations and practices in order to prevent it from happening again. And laboratory accidents do occur. To tell you the truth, most of the ones that I've heard about have been here in the United States. So we would like for that our labs to be as safe as possible. Labs are necessary, by the way, because you do need to study it. But if there's a practice that needs to be modified, let's figure it out. So we need more transparency in this, and we haven't seen transparency yet. So a lot of scientists are calling for that now. The Olympics. So the Olympics are getting closer. What, July, I guess? It seems to me, from reading media and talking to my friends in Japan, who I have many, that most of Japan doesn't want them. But the ICC thinks they can pull it off safely. They probably can. I think all the athletes will be vaccinated before they go, and they'll have a pretty rigorous testing program. And we've had other athletic events, you know, big tennis tournaments and such in different countries where people come from all over. And we've been able to do all those safely. Including coming up later this summer, the Winston-Salem Open. Big tennis tournament, national, international, here in Winston. Been involved some in looking at their plans, and they look good. I think they can pull it off. Olympics is a bit of bigger scale and a lot more people, and I would think that there will not be a lot of spectators at this Olympics if they do have them. And that's at least my prediction. So we'll have to wait and see how all that plays out. I think it would be unfortunate, but you know, events like this can be postponed, maybe putting it off another year would be okay. What else has happened in the world in the last 2 weeks? Moderna applied for their full FDA approval. So I think both Pfizer's messenger RNA vaccine and Moderna's messenger RNA vaccine by the end of the summer will be fully FDA approved. Once full FDA approval comes about, then the certain restrictions on how we give the vaccine and it will go away, and then we have easier logistics to vaccinate. And that makes it easier for us to get into private practices and into primary care physicians' offices, which has already started, but it'll just make it a little easier because the consent process changed some. You're also going to be hearing more about mandating vaccines from workplaces, from universities, from schools, and healthcare in particular, because for us in healthcare, the best way to protect our patients from COVID is to get us vaccinated. So you'll be hearing more from that, particularly as the full FDA approval comes out. The other thing that's been new in the last week is CDC came out with their summer camp advice last week. This one, they put more language in there to help people understand when and when not to mask and how to do things for summer camp. So, just as a summary of that, and you can find their guidance on their website. But, one is that you have to know how complete your vaccination coverage is for your campers and for your staff. So they say if everyone, campers and staff, are fully vaccinated, that basically you can do your summer camp like normal, both day camps as well as sleepover camps. But you don't have to mask, you don't have to distance, you can have indoor-outdoor activities however you would like to do them. So the challenge is getting 100% of your people vaccinated, if a camp is able to do that, or get really reasonably close to that, what is reasonably close? Probably 90% or so for a summer camp. Then you can do that. If you're less than that, or if you have kids under the age of 12 who can't get vaccinated, or you have children with special medical needs in your camp, then you're going to have add some layers of Swiss cheese. Remember last week we talked about the Swiss cheese, the virus trying to get from one end to another, and you put all these different Swiss cheeses in there, and so that the virus has to go through these holes and it eventually gets blocked. The more slices of Swiss cheese, the less likely the virus will transmit. So if you don't have everyone 100% vaccinated, or mostly, again, over 90%, I would say, for a summer camp, then you would need to add some Swiss cheese. And the best Swiss cheese slice to put in there is a mask. When would you need to wear a mask in that situation? When you have kids under the age of 12 or kids with special medical needs, or if everyone's not vaccinated? Indoors, the mask should be worn indoors. Outdoors, I don't think it's necessary for, you know, a lot of summer camps, it's a lot of outdoor living, right? Spend a lot of time outdoors. So for all those activities outdoors, playing capture the flag, going to the lake to go swimming, going on your hikes, archery, all those things we enjoy at camp. You can do that without masks on. If you come indoors, particularly for the big sing-a-thons in the dining hall or the craft station indoors or in the place where you sleep, your residence cabins, then you should have a mask on. Although, even last year we said you don't need to wear the mask actually while sleeping because there's just not as much air movement. So, but if you're in the cabin hanging out with your counselors, playing games, yeah, you should be masked indoors if everyone's not vaccinated, if you have kids with special needs, if you have kids under the age of 12. And that includes vaccinated staff. So if you're a vaccinated staff member and you're working with kids under the age of 12, you need to wear a mask. This is for day camps and for residence camps. The other thing the CDC says about camps is that you still should be cohorting unless everyone's vaccinated, which means you put kids together in groups and you try to keep them in those groups all at the same time. So that cohort goes to the dining hall together, that cohort goes to the swimming hall together, that cohort does crafts at the same time. So everyone will get to know everyone in that cohort. But that way we can do contact tracing, so if there is a case, you don't have to shut down the whole camp. And just shut down the cohort. So that's a little bit about summer camp. So do I think it's safe to go to a summer camp this summer? I do, yeah, as long as the summer camp's following the rules and doing what they're supposed to do. So if you got kids going to summer camp, call up your place. Call them up and ask them, can I see your plan? What's your plan? How do you plan to get through the summer? Our case numbers are a little bit lower now than they were at this time this last summer. Not a heck of a lot lower, actually, but a little lower than they were at this time last summer. I think it's safe to go to the camp as long as everyone's doing everything else. I also get questions about what about school next year? Is it safe to send my kids to school, or should I homeschool, or if there's an option to virtual school? I think it is safe to have your kids go back to school next year, even for the under 12, for the undergrades, the lower schools, because I believe the lower schools will all be masking still here in North Carolina because those kids won't be vaccinated yet. And then if we can get through to the end of the fall, when most of our kids should be vaccinated, because it's going to come up in October or November, I think, for the under 12 group, then maybe we can talk about not needing to mask and social distance in the undergrades. The upper classes, it's going to depend on the percentage of people in that class vaccinated. And as the school, we get through the summer, I think the schools will be looking at that. So there's some schools in our region who vaccine penetration in the upper schools doesn't seem to be real high, and there are others that is. So we may be in a situation. So the bottom line is, and I'll say it again, you got a couple ways to get immune to COVID-19. One is to get vaccinated, and the other is just to hang out, stay unvaccinated, and eventually get it. How many people are going to get through the pandemic without getting immune through either of those ways? It's going to be a very, very, very small number. Because COVID's going to fade into the background and be one of our usual respiratory viruses. Hopefully, as it does so, it becomes less severe, but we don't know that yet. So let's get vaccinated, and that way we can all have more of a normal life and have it together and for our entire communities.